let's get started. Roll call.
Chair McMillan.
Here.
Commissioner Hollingsworth.
Here.
Commissioner Hurt.
Here.
Commissioner Merrick.
Here.
Commissioner Mielke.
Here.
Commissioner Reynolds.
Here.
Commissioner Tustison.
Here.
All present. Thank you.
So our first agenda item is a welcome to our new Water Utility Commissioner member, Mr. Tom Merrick. Welcome very much. Tom.
Thank you.
Glad to have you. I was wondering if you would mind taking a minute or two to sort of tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Moved to Oro Valley in June of this year. I spent the last 15 years in power generation, both nuclear, coal, and then renewables. And the move and the career change were all part to move me out to where I wanted to end up. So that's how I ended up here.
Where were you?
I was most recently in Fort Worth, Texas. But I spent most of my career in Detroit, Michigan. I worked for Detroit Edison.
Thank you very much. So we should probably do introductions just so everybody knows who everybody is. I'll start with Mr. Hollingsworth.
Chuck Hollingsworth.
Hi. Welcome.
Charlie Hurt. Welcome.
Byron McMillan.
Bob Mielke.
Rick Reynolds.
Winston Tustison.
Abraham.
Mary Rollins.
Shirley Keel.
You guys down there on the end, can you tell everyone a little bit about what you do for the utility?
I'm the senior office specialist.
The water utility director.
Water utility administrator.
And I'm the outgoing water utility administrator.
All right, thank you very much. So before we move on, there's a rumor that someone very special to us is going to be retiring in a very short period of time. I think it's Friday. We were talking to Shirley before the meeting. She's been here 23 years. So she pretty much has seen the city and the town of Oro Valley grow up. And been there all along. So just for my own self, I've been around for 3 years now, and I've seen how you work and you do an excellent job. You've done an amazing job of helping keep our finances straight and well-funded, and working with our finance subcommittee for many years. I know that's not easy. But just a big thank you for all you've done for the town and for the commission. And we wish you a very happy retirement, whatever areas that takes you. And hope to see you around after you take off.
Oh. Well, thank you very much, Chair. It's truly been my pleasure over the years. It really has. I'll miss the work, miss the people.
So. There's always blue cards.
I've been warned not to do that.
So other than that, here we're starting a new year. 2020 is upon us. I just wanted to say a quick thank you to all the commissioners, all the town staff. Rhonda, if she was here, our council liaison. I think 2019 was a really exceptional year for the utility. I thought everyone did an amazing job of keeping everything on track and moving forward. And 2020, I'm looking forward to. There's going to be a lot of big improvements this year as well. So thank you all for all of your diligent work and all your contributions to everything we do. It's much appreciated. So that being said, shall we go on to review and approval of the November 12th, 2019 special session meeting minutes? Any discussion or motions on the minutes?
Move to approve.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion to move and a second. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? It carries. Okay, so once a year we have our annual election of a chair and a vice chair position for the commission. And then after that, we'll talk about subcommittee appointments. Do we have any discussion on chair election?
Mr. Chair, I move that the current chair, Byron McMillan, be reappointed as chair.
Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you very much. Let's move on to the election of a new vice chair, commission vice chair. Any discussion or motions on that?
Mr. Chair, I move that Rick Reynolds be appointed vice chair.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Congratulations, Commissioner Reynolds. Okay, so Peter, did you say you wanted to talk about this next one? Give us the background.
Thank you, Chair McMillan. So with respect to the Water Utility Commission subcommittees, the Water Utility has two subcommittees right now. We have a Finance Subcommittee and a Water Resource and Conservation Subcommittee. We can only have three commissioners on each subcommittee, so two subcommittees with three commissioners, that's six commissioners. In 2019, Commissioner Reynolds very graciously volunteered to not fill a subcommittee position, but he had expressed at the time that in 2020 he would like to be on a subcommittee. So as we go through this process, I think if he's still interested, at Commissioner Reynolds is, you know, should have a seat on one of the commissions or one of the subcommittees, sorry. Right now on the Finance Subcommittee, we have Commissioner Tustison, Commissioner Mielke, and Commissioner Hollingsworth. And on the Water Resources and Conservation Subcommittee, we have Chair McMillan, and we have one vacancy that was filled by Ann, who's termed out, so we have a vacancy. And then we have Commissioner Hurt on the Water Resources and Conservation Subcommittee. So with that being said, I think when I had spoken with the other commissioners, the commissioners that were on a subcommittee had expressed the interest of staying on a subcommittee, but I just want to see if there's any interest of anybody stepping down from one of those subcommittees. So we got to kind of wrestle with that.
We have a lot going on up in Ventana, and my work schedule is really getting pressed. So I would be willing to not sit on the committee if there's other members that can fill those positions.
Okay, well, thank you very much. That's probably going to make things a little easier. So with that being said, let me start with this. On the Finance Subcommittee, are the commissioners that are on that subcommittee now, do they want to stay on that same subcommittee? We'll start with the Finance Subcommittee.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, okay. So then that leaves a vacancy that we have on the Water Resources and Conservation Subcommittee. Does somebody have an interest of filling that vacancy? Well, first of all, the people that are on that subcommittee, do they want to stay on it?
Yes.
Okay, so we have the one vacancy. Is anybody, I don't know, Commissioner Merrick, would you be interested in filling that subcommittee position?
Sure.
That went a lot better than I thought it was going to. And I think I'm going to have to buy Commissioner Reynolds a Christmas turkey this year. So thank you. That made things easier. But next time around, you get first dibs. So thank you.
Appreciate it.
Is there anything else, Danielle, that we need on that? Or are we good?
Now, okay. That was last year's Christmas turkey, right?
That's right. So it's going to be two of them.
Just so you'll know, Peter personally went and spoke to the clerk and the town attorney yesterday to clarify that, yes, they will only allow three commissioners on the subcommittee. We thought they might give us some slack, but they said no. All right, thanks, Peter. Okay, so that was... So let's talk about discussion and possible action on changing the Water Utility Commission monthly meeting time. So early last year, we had a discussion and voted to change our meeting time to 5 o'clock, primarily to allow utility staff to have a slightly shorter day, since the meeting was going to start an hour earlier. And so we made that change, and we decided at the same time that we would have our meeting revert back to 6 o'clock in January 2020, and then have the discussion again on whether we want to keep it at 6 or change it again back to 5 o'clock, based on what had happened last year in our meeting. So that's sort of the background on it. So does anybody have any comments or discussion on this one?
How does the staff feel?
Let's find out. How does the staff feel?
Commissioners, I can speak for the staff that they preferred the 5 p.m. commission meeting time. But with that being said, we serve at, with respect to the Water Utility Commission, we serve at your pleasure. So it doesn't matter what the time is. If it's 6 o'clock, that's what we'll do, and we're happy to do it.
Are there any people who would have a problem with 5 o'clock?
I like 5 o'clock better.
I would move that we make the meetings at 5 o'clock.
Second.
Very good. We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? We have a 5 o'clock meeting. Thank you very much. Okay, once a year we have a discussion about the commission work plan for the following year, and that's our next agenda item.
Has the commission had a chance to review the work plan? When we assemble the work plan, there's several just core functions that have to happen, water rates, budget, and those sorts of things. And then there's also, quarterly things we do, aquifer metrics and monitoring and water resources, supply and usage kind of thing that we report on quarterly, and semi-annually we report on, financial things. But this is just a work plan. It's a working document. But I think if anybody had something that was just outstanding that they felt they wanted to add, or something that they wanted staff to look at, we want to make sure we get that on the work plan. And also bear in mind, if it comes February or March or April that the commission thinks of something, we can always add something to the work plan. It's a working, living document. But with that, is there anything glaring that we miss that the commission feels that we need to talk about? Just, I'd like to point out a couple of things. Typically, every calendar year, I like to have, just kind of two little fun things for the commission. We usually do a field trip in the spring, and then in the fall have a guest speaker. This spring, I've arranged us to take a tour of Kai Farms Red Rock Groundwater Savings Facility. That'll be kind of something that the commission's heard me talk about before. We can go see that. Haven't yet scheduled the guest speaker slated for September, but I'm sure I can find somebody interesting that'll be fun to listen to and educational at the same time.
I have a couple of questions. First, you don't anticipate anything in the coming year with respect that would require commission action with respect to anything on NWRRDS?
Not this calendar year. If there were, though, I'd certainly, add it to the work plan.
Okay. That's all I have.
Thank you.
Any other comments, questions?
I'll make a motion. We approve the Oroville Water Utility 2020 work plan as drafted on 1-3-2020.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Approved. Thank you very much. Okay, update and discussion on the water rates analysis.
Thank you, Chair McMillan. Our new Water Utility Administrator, Mary Rallis, will be presenting to the Commission.
This presentation is an update of the water rates analysis. The water rates analysis goals are to develop water rates that generate sufficient revenue to meet revenue and cash reserve requirements, meet debt service coverage requirements, ensure revenue stability, maintain the overall financial health of the utility, and also to promote water conservation, be the minimum necessary to avoid rate shock, and adapt to changing rate drivers and consumer trends. The assumptions that we use are consistent with the general fund's financial plan. Personnel costs use, we use 2% annually for merit increases. Arizona State Retirement Pension, 2% annually. Healthcare increases of 0.5% annually. And we use an inflation rate of 2% annually. The single family residential growth rates of 1395 over the 5-year planning period. And we also have a new proposed development impact fee, which goes into effect July 1st, 2020. The assumptions specific to the water utility is no planned additional staff, reprioritizing capital projects, new debt financing for NWRRDS, DS in fiscal year 21-22, existing capital projects in 22-23, rising cost of renewable water supplies, increases in wheeling costs, which are increases in wheeling costs, increases in CAP water delivery costs related to projected drought contingency plan shortages. The consumer water use trends, loss of an 18-hole golf course, and we have a revised allocation of reclaimed water costs. And this year we used a new reclaimed cost allocation model to allocate those expenses. The reclaimed model identifies specific costs to be allocated and identifies methodologies used to allocate costs like percent staffing, volume of water delivered, miles of pipeline, number of meters, number of facilities, value of fixed facility assets, net of depreciation, and it calculates the cost of the allocated cost, calculation of the allocated cost. And it's updated annually with new budget and debt service amounts. Then this is the first spreadsheet. This is first input sheet where we enter information into it, and it calculates a percentage for each of the allocation methods. The first method is staffing costs. And we're using the fiscal year 1920 authorized positions of 39.5, and on the right is the percent of time working in reclaim activities for each of the divisions, and that's a weighted average of 9.91. in the volume delivered, it's an average. The data uses average three prior fiscal years. And the miles of pipeline, meters, and facilities use data from October 31st, 2019. And facility asset net of depreciation was from the financials of 18-19. On the next sheet are all the budgeted expenses for fiscal year 19-20 with the allocation methods. Examples are building repair and maintenance. It's a percent of facilities at 13.46. Insurance is percent of asset value at 18.52. Field supplies, percent staffing at 9.91. And then equipment repair and maintenance is a direct cost of 100%. And the total for budget year 1920 is almost 1.4 million. And for the water analysis, we increased these numbers by 2% every year. So after the implementation of this reclaim model resulted in a reduction in costs allocated to the reclaim system. So the current reclaim rate structure resulted in overpayment of costs, and we need to realign revenues with expenses. So we're proposing a reduction in the reclaimed commodity rate and the reduction in the reclaimed GPF. Revenues from the reclaimed GPF will continue to pay for the reclaimed debt, as well as debt for potable system improvements that provide resource reliability to the reclaimed system. Some unknown factors that could impact the utility: Arizona DCP, will CAP rates increase more than projected? Will golf course irrigation be reduced more than it is today? Will the volume and timing of growth occur as projected? And in 2019, there was an impact fee analysis prepared by Tischler Bice, and there was a review and update of land use assumptions, the infrastructure improvements plan, and development impact fees. And it proposes to combine the alternative water resource development impact fee and potable water system development impact fee into one impact fee, which is both fees are very similar and fund infrastructure in the same way, and they're both water resource driven and are required to meet growth demands. So the new fee is going to be called the water resource and system development impact fee. The proposed impact fee for a 5/8 inch meter, which is 88% of our customer base, will be residential 6,387, which is slightly higher. The commercial would be 7,087, which is slightly less, and irrigation 14,343, which is higher. There will be a public hearing at tomorrow's council meeting on the land use assumptions and the IIP. This was brought forward to the preferred financial scenario was brought forward to the finance subcommittee, and there was a consensus on what was the preferred scenario, which is increased potable water monthly base rate, decreased reclaimed commodity rate, and decreased reclaimed groundwater preservation fees. At the next Water Utility Commission, we'll be asking for a recommendation on the water rates, which will be on February 3rd. Here are some more dates. The next meeting will be February 3rd for a recommendation on the water rates. On March 11th, the town council meeting will be adoption of notice of intent to increase rates. On April 3rd, we'll publish a public hearing date on town's website, and that's a 60-day notice. On May 1st, we'll publish notice of intent in newspaper. That's a 20-day notice. On June 3rd, the town council meeting, there will be a public hearing to adopt the proposed rates. And if adopted on July 3rd, new rates will become effective 30 days after adoption. On August 1st, we'll begin billing the new rates. And that was it.
I have a question. Okay. Just for clarification. You mentioned removing 18 holes of golf. Is that the Vistoso golf course?
Yes.
That came out?
Yes.
So it's not an additional 18 holes.
No.
It's 18 holes we already
right.
know.
Commissioner Mill gave that. This is the first financial pro forma that has no water consumption for that golf
yeah,
course.
I understand. Okay. I just wanted to be sure everybody understood.
I was curious, what was the contributing factors to the reclaim system cost going down?
Chair McMillan, so, well, previously, three or four years ago, there wasn't a real defined methodology. And then very recently, a couple of years ago, Shirley and I developed a methodology that was based on a production or consumption, a percentage between potable water pumped and reclaimed water pumped. And it allowed us, a methodology that, was reproducible. It seemed equitable. And we used that methodology for 2 years. But we knew there was the potential for refinement in that. So for this fiscal year, we had budgeted money to have a consultant, help us do a cost of service study, help us look at our reclaimed methodology and our reclaimed rate. And was encouraging what they found out is they liked where we were going with it, but they felt there was some refinement in that, it may be just not one overall blanket percentage for everything, that maybe we could break up personnel, we could break up the assets, we could break up number of meters, miles of pipeline, and just basically further refined the methodology for developing a rate. And what we found is when we really sharpened the pencil and really looked at everything more holistically, closer, that we were over-collecting on the reclaimed rate. So it really came down to what Mary was showing you back here, is before we developed a rate setting based on just volume delivered here. And Shirley, if I misspeak on anything, please chime in, because I don't want to misspeak at all. But then the consultant said they liked where we were going with this, and because one of the direction we provided the consultant was, we don't want to put a bunch of data in a black box, turn a handle, and have it spit out a number, and none of us can explain how it works. One of the guiding instructions we gave them was, first of all, staff has to understand it. We want a model that we can use without them, and year after year after year, it was reproducible, it was equitable. To a reasonable person, it made sense, and I think we accomplished that, and that's where we come up with, okay, hey, certain things, percent staffing, let's look at that percentage. Certain things, let's look at volume delivered, so on and so forth, with miles of pipeline, meters, facilities, and the facility assets. So really, instead of just using one percentage for everything, we just broke it up more. And I think we accomplished all of our objectives with developing this rate model. But in the end, this model indicates that we had been over collecting with respect to the reclaimed, and it's equitable to reduce the reclaimed rate and the GPF.
So the decrease, was that impacted substantially or at all by the loss of the golf course?
Shirley, can I defer that question to you? I'm not sure if I understood the question.
Chair McMillan, it did have an impact, certainly. But overall, it was really a reduction in the costs that were allocated to that system. We were doing an across-the-board 23% last year, and the year before that, it was 24%. And this is probably, if you added them all together, closer to 18 or 19%. So this had a bigger impact in the reduction, because while we lost revenue, we had offsetting cost reductions by not delivering that reclaimed water as well. So.
Thank you. It might be worth mentioning that we, on the finance subcommittee, we nitpicked our way through this allocation, looking at the details pretty carefully. It's a sort of a sophisticated way of approaching it, I think. And mm-hmm. It's nicely done. Mm-hmm.
I think we probably spent about an hour just on this single item.
And I think what's important is, like I had stated earlier, is we wanted a methodology that we understood and we can explain. And was really encouraging, I think, for Shirley and Mary and I, is in our imperfect words, we were able to communicate this to the subcommittee and they got it. You know, so that was kind of a litmus test for me. It was like, hey, okay, we can explain this and it makes sense, you know. So, you know, could you go through and really, you know, I think we've reached the limit of diminishing marginal returns on developing a model. I think we could put a lot of extra effort in it, and I don't know that we'd get a number that was really any better. And then I certainly wouldn't be able to explain it.
Yeah, in my experience, there is not usually a unique cost allocation method, but there are usually options to be chosen, all within a certain acceptable set of guidelines. But if you're doing it for federal grants or contracts, you've got a particular set of guidelines they give you, but there's still some options you can take. And this it's probably not the only way, but it's an acceptable and acceptably detailed way of doing this, and I think it's very good. I think the results are good.
Well done.
Well, thank you, and especially thanks goes to our consultant, Westland Resources, and Mary and Shirley for their financial expertise. So thank you to the staff.
And a special thank you to our finance subcommittee, who met many times this year. Really appreciate your efforts to work with us this year. We had a lot of different things going on this year. So thank you.
I think I personally have heard Commissioner Tustison state at least two, maybe three times, that this was an extra challenging year for the finance subcommittee. Yeah. Good job. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's move on to Councilmember Pena is not here. Is anybody able to take her place? So we'll pass that one. Subcommittee, Commissioner Reports, Finance Subcommittee.
Nothing additional.
As far as the Water Resources and Conservation Subcommittee, the last time we met, way back when, we discussed primarily two things. One was the development of a welcome kit for new customers, so they could have a good idea of how the water utility works and all the different ways that they can find out about their water usage on WaterSmart and water conservation, all those things. And then we talked about the utility beginning an effort to find ways to find out how customers use their water more precisely, whether it be their business or their homes. For example, outside usage versus inside usage, that sort of thing. And Peter and staff have been working on that. So as soon as they have something substantial they want to get together and talk about and share it with us, and we'll announce a new meeting time. Okay. Staff reports, financial reports.
This is the financial report through December 31st, which is halfway through the fiscal year. The first slide are the revenues, and they are tracking to budget at December 31st. Usually the first 6 months are a little higher than the last 6 months of the fiscal year, that's why it's tracking a little higher than the 50%. The next slide are the expenses, which are tracking at or below budget. The next slide are the capital projects. And Peter, are you going
to? Sure. You know, this is something that's I've typically seen in the last 4 years, and I wanted to discuss it with the commission here. The way we do our capital projects right now is within the same fiscal year we design, put together contract documents, and construct our capital projects. And what typically happens is, if you look here, you know, we've budgeted $2.7 million, and year to date we've spent, you know, 18-20% of that. And what typically happens is the first 6 months of the year we're putting together specifications and contract documents, and it's only now that, you know, we have bids and we're going out to construction. So you'll see this jump up the second half of the year. One of the things we're working on right now is trying to get ahead of the curve on this. Ideally, I'd like to transition to designing and putting together contract documents one fiscal year and constructing the next. That way we have the whole fiscal year to construct some of these projects. And some of these projects, you can't construct them in 6 months. They take a year. I predict that at the end of the fiscal year, we have one of our projects that's going slow, and it's things that are out of our control, having to do with getting easements from landowners and working with other utilities, you know, outside of the town. I expect us, we're probably going to be about the $2 million mark with this existing system CIP. But you know, it doesn't look good right now because it's so low, but it doesn't reflect the work that we're now starting to do. So I expect this to be much improved by the end of the fiscal year. The green here represents the partnered Northwest Recharge and Recovery Delivery System project. Here again, you know, things are moving along, but like most projects, there's been delays, there's been permitting issues, nothing that affects the project overall, but it just slows down the progress a little bit. But so this doesn't worry me that much. And then we have our independent portion, and we haven't had any expenditures there. It's only right now that we're working with the preferred consultant, and we finalized our scope, and now we're negotiating the fee. So I would expect, you know, by the end of the fiscal year, of that $980,000, we might have $500,000 or $600,000 spent. So just kind of wanted to explain why the expenditures are so low to the budgeted amounts. But I think it'll probably take us another fiscal year cycle to get to where we could be designing 1 year and constructing the next. So I just wanted to elaborate a little bit on this. Thank you.
The next slide is a customer service update through December 31st. New meters installed are 136. Projected for the fiscal year are 300, so we're tracking to at about 270 for a year end. Customer base is 20,324. Water audits performed 39, and there are 10,800 customer email addresses for the WaterSmart software. Thank you.
much. Director's report.
Thank you, Chair McMillan. Just some standard issue stuff here. Upcoming meetings. Tomorrow we have our town council regular session. The impact fees is on that agenda. And as we have it on our work plan with respect to the impact fees, I'm expecting that I'll be able to report in detail on what that looks like. But we need to see how tomorrow night goes first. January 22nd, town council regular session, this room, council chamber, 6 p.m. And our next Water Utility Commission meeting is slated for February 3rd at 5 p.m. in council chambers. Last month, I had the privilege to attend the Colorado River Water Users Association in conference in Las Vegas. This conference, I think, has been running for 75 years now, and the acronym is CRUA. And it's the first time I went, and it was really, I wanted to share the experience with the commission and all of my other privileged activities that I get to do on behalf of the town. You know, most of them are Arizona-based, you know, working with our Southern Arizona water provider partners, collaborating with our Phoenix area water provider partners, and really looking at things from an Arizona perspective. What was neat about this conference is the conference for all seven basin states: Colorado, New Mexico, Utah, Wyoming, Arizona, California, Nevada, representatives of the tribes, and representatives from Mexico. All together, they had lots of sessions of various topics, and what an eye-opening experience. It's so neat to, you know, I've spoken with my colleagues in Arizona. We're kind of mostly equally yoked on how we think about water resources in Arizona in general. But when you start talking to folks from the upper basin states, they have some different perspectives, and we have different thoughts about what are the lower basin states doing right and wrong, and us with what are the upper basin states doing right and wrong. It was really neat to get together, just share those ideas. Some folks are very passionate, you know, about their views and opinions. I just kind of went with an open mind. And I'll tell you what I had heard was last year, that was when we were working on the drought contingency plan, and it was very kind of like an uptight, very stressful conference. As you know, we got DCP passed, and this year was almost like a sigh of relief. Like, everybody was just like, ah. But, you know, the work isn't done yet. So the title for 2019 was Exploring the River Together, and I put these words together from the various sessions I went to. This is what I came up with, my overall takeaway from the conference: fulfilling a century-old vision of an equitable dividing of the waters of the Colorado River among the divergent interests while preserving the splendor of the Colorado River. I mean, that's a lot to chew on. And kind of the theme this year was, okay, the 2007 guidelines, they expire in 2026, and we kind of have to start all over. And just kind of everyone sticking their toe in the water to see, you know, how are we going to go about doing this? Nothing's in stone. Some folks are licking their wounds. I think in some way, I think because DCP was successful, I think everybody's licking some wounds. You know, I don't think anybody came out of it unscathed, which is probably a good thing. So the drought contingency planning, the next steps. One of the conferences I went to was in the Rules of the River. In summary, first in time, first in right. I went to some conferences where they offered up upper basin state perspectives, and the upper basin states, Colorado, New Mexico, Utah, and Wyoming. They're exploring ways to increase water stored in Lake Powell. Does that sound familiar to us, looking for ways to increase storage in Lake Mead? Well, it sure does. Three main focus areas. I heard a phrase here I hadn't heard before. I think it's another way of saying conservation. Implementing a demand management program. So I've been thinking about that one, but I think that's another way of saying conservation. measurements of consumptive use. I thought that was really interesting. Some of the talks I had heard were talking about, you know, how are our consumers or our customers using water? This is something that the Water Resource and Conservation Subcommittee asked itself when we're trying to develop tools so we can figure out the metrics on that. So that sounded familiar to me. That was good to hear. And then Upper Basin Recovery Programs. Also went to some lectures on the Lower Basin State perspective. Of course, I was very familiar with that. You know, for example, Arizona, we're already, we call it an intentionally created surplus, or ICS, in Lake Mead. What it is, you know, the Arizona, we've been acting as if we're in a tier one drought. This will be our third year now. Through agreements executed by CAP with users holding contracts for the delivery of CAP water, CAP has been providing incentives to water users to offset or reduce their scheduled CAP delivery. They've been doing this through several methods. One of the ones that comes to mind is the fallowing of agriculture land. Once you fallow agriculture land and retire it, you know, that water that land was using is no longer needed. No one else gets it, so it stays in Lake Mead. So Arizona, you know, moving forward, we're looking at ways of conserving. It all comes down to conservation right now, conserving more, leaving more water in Lake Mead. California, they have an implementation of agriculture land fallowing, the Salton Sea Management Program, and I won't go into too much detail on that, but right now they put Colorado River water in the Salton Sea just to keep it full because it's an environmental hazard if it dries up. And so we can talk about that another day if there's interest in it. Some very interesting things, but it really comes down to California needs to look at how they're using their water. And they know this. And they're looking at ways of conserving. I thought Nevada, they're pushing water conservation. They have a pretty aggressive water conservation program. In fact, they've changed their code that eliminates non-functional turf. And non-functional turf is defined as if the only time a person stands on it is to mow it, it's not functional. So I thought that was interesting. So in summary, I made some notes here. In 2020, Arizona is on track to receive under 2.5 million acre feet of the 2.8 million acre feet it's entitled. So that's that intentionally created surplus. California is on track to receive 4 million acre feet of its 4.4 million acre feet that it's entitled. And Nevada, it only has an entitlement of 300,000 acre feet, but they're on track to only receive 236,000 acre feet. So some real interesting things going on with the lower basin states. And it's basically conservation. One of the things I didn't realize, I thought was interesting, I was sat in on a seminar where they were talking about Colorado River Basin weather modification, cloud seeding. I didn't know this, but Arizona is one of the lower basin states. We've helped fund a program in Colorado to do cloud seeding. And the data suggests that effort results in a 4% annual increase in precipitation. I don't know, maybe it's decimal dust or not, but I guess every bit counts. But I didn't know that was being done. I thought that was interesting. Of course, there was a discussion on climate change and what does science say? We could talk about this for hours. In the end, the real question comes down to, yeah, climate changes. Is it due to man? Is it natural? You know, we could debate that till the end of time. But really what it comes down to is how do these changes affect the aquifer? How does it affect these water systems? And the shift has really gone from, you know, does climate change exist to how does changing climate affect these water systems? So, you know, some interesting discussion there. And also the evaluation of the effectiveness of the 2007 guidelines and reservoir management. And I really, this was one of the last seminars of the day. And I think it was really the launching point to get us thinking about when the 2007 guidelines expire in 2026. Is it working? Is it enough? And where do we go from here? I think the answer is yes, it worked. And with DCP, it works better. But no, it's not enough. And stay tuned, because I'm going to be updating this commission on this for the next 6 years. Again, it was a privilege to go to this conference. It's a conference I hope I can go to every year. It was really neat networking with some folks with some other states. The Secretary of the Interior was there. A lot of folks from the Bureau of Reclamation was there, folks that you wouldn't normally have access to, you could talk to. It was a good reality check for me. Here in southern Arizona, you know, I feel like I'm kind of a big deal. Everybody knows who Oro Valley is, and, you know, we're doing good stuff here. You'd go to a conference like this, and the first thing people do is they look at their badge and they say, "Where's Oro Valley?" So, you know, it's like, really? Everybody knows where Oro Valley is, you know, but they didn't know where Tucson was. But a good reality check. It was fun talking to all these folks, and I look forward to building some relationships with these folks in the future. So that concludes my report. Thank you.
Very interesting. Thank you. I realized earlier I forgot to do call to the audience. Do we have any speakers tonight? Yeah, speakers. That's good. Future agenda items. Hearing none, do I have a motion on adjournment?
So moved.
Second.
Motion and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? We're adjourned.
Okay. 2020.